This week, we ask the critical question, where did the magic go? That occult magic that somehow permeates all of Masonic ritual, and how can we get it back? Then, in all new Masonic Mythbusters, Brother Patrick Day tackles one of the toughest questions ever related to the fraternity, Albert Pike, racism, and slavery. In this unapologetic, candid look at just the facts, Brother Patrick Day takes a look at the numerous writings of Albert Pike and determines exactly where the man and Masonic Titan stand. There's no escaping these conclusions. Finally, we'll wrap it up with an awesome piece from Brother Randy Sanders. Do you love Masonic education but hate all that esoteric stuff, or vice versa? Are you just a hard esotericist and can't take the rest? Brother Randy Sanders has some great ideas on how to properly approach Masonic symbolism, and we do it gently. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 558. I want to thank the producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners of the program who have been able to contribute to this education endeavor, allowing us to create over 10 years of content to be able to spread Masonic education, the royal art, to all those interested worldwide. If you're curious on how to make a difference in Masonic education and you'd like to be a part of the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and see how you can help. In addition, we have a shop with limited edition items that we offer strictly there, in addition to some handmade bespoke leather items that I hand make. And we have a bookstore, which are all Amazon affiliate links back to books by people we've had on the show, including their own personal reading recommendations as well as my own. In the news, just want to say MasonicCon Kansas is going to be amazing. It's right around the corner. And one of the things that I need to mention is that it is totally sold out. No more tickets are available. However, there is a digital pass that is available, and you can pick that up for just $15. So you get a bunch of presentations, you get live access to them as they happen for $15, and also they're recorded, so you can watch them whenever you want at your own leisure once they upload. So pretty great value, if I do say so, and I do say so. Secondly, I want to thank Brother Mike Treloff for inviting me out to York Yarns, really interesting kind of 15-minute presentation things. He lined up 8 speakers, and we're all just going to do this thing, and it's going to be awesome. So I want to thank Brother Mike for this opportunity and for the unique education forum he's put together here. Also, I need to mention MasonicCon South, or as it is said on the website, MasonicCon South, y'all. MasonicCon South 2022. It's going to happen in North Carolina. Really excited about it. It's one of the first events of its kind in the area. It's going to be hosted at Greensboro Masonic Temple. Now, it has been the brainchild of a few brothers, but one of the chief architects certainly is Brother Matthew Parker, somebody who has been endeavoring and working in the quarries of Masonic education, both in person and via the web, for many years. Brother Matt was instrumental when Refracted Light launched as a Facebook group to bring Masonic education and its kindred sciences to the masses in untiled settings. Really great stuff. MasonicCon South, again, October 15th. It's a full day of events with a festive board. Some of the most amazing speakers are going to be there. Guys that, of course, I am always inspired by. Joe Martinez, John Ruark, Sean Bradshaw, P.D. Newman, and Jason Richards, who I'm really excited about. A few Masonic speakers get me excited about the topic. Then Jason Richards, who for this presentation, it's going to be an all-new one that he made just for this event. So we're really excited about that. I'm super stoked to be there and to do a talk and to listen to all of these brothers share some awesome light with us. The tickets are $75 for the day's education, and then there's a $50 festive board happening as well. Altogether, $125 day. I would probably need to tell you that the festive board is filling up pretty fast. I know it's all the way out in October, but there's only 24 seats left. 24 seats left. Holy cow. So if you want to take a part, then you probably need to get on over there sooner than later. You're going to go to MasonicConSouth.com. That's MasonicConSouth.com. I know it's going to be an awesome day. There's vendors, speakers, the festive board, the whole nine yards. So definitely put it on your calendar. Check it out. Now, the first piece I have for you this week that I'm really excited to read for you is one that caught my eye because the title, Where Did the Magic Go? Now, it doesn't seem so crazy except for the fact that they spelled magic with a K. What is that all about? A typo? No, like I think in the community, most people kind of understand in the occult sciences and things, this differentiation between writing the word magic, M-A-G-I-C, and the word M-A-G-I-C-K. Adding that K, that hard K, somehow delineates prestidigitation from perhaps some more occult work. And so when this piece came up, I thought, wow, where is this? And then I noticed, you know, of course, it's from Darren Lehner's worshipful brother, who put this together. And I read it, loved the piece, and I really just want to share it with you all. So here we go. Where did the magic go? By Midnight Freemason contributor, worshipful brother Darren A. Lehners. Like many of you, when I joined Freemasonry, I was told that Freemasonry was a quote-unquote system of morality veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols. I expected to learn life-altering secrets, but discovered none. Nobody gave me any information other than what I was told in degrees. So I started to read everything I could about Freemasonry. I read about its history, symbols, ideas, and esoteric components. However, when I wanted to discuss these ideas, I found only a few brothers willing to discuss them, and never in an open lodge. Later, when I became a district education officer, I saw firsthand the negative reactions of some older lodge members when a lodge education officer brought up discussing the Kabbalah. Let me just say that the Hindenburg and Titanic were lesser disasters than his attempt. At that moment, it dawned on me. The fact of the matter is that instead of embracing the esoteric side of Freemasonry, the majority of Freemasons eschew it. Before I get any further, I want to make it completely clear that I'm not wanting to perform Crowley's magic. I have no desire to perform the Babylon working. If I wanted such things, I'd go join the Golden Dawn or the OTO. What I want is to make the average exoteric Freemason understand that, whether they like it or not, we perform ritual magic in every degree. I want them to talk about it. Most importantly, I want them to be able to acknowledge that it's okay to be talked about. Don't believe me? Magic, in the Western esoteric tradition, is the use of ritual and symbolism to change your perception of reality. What happened to you in your degrees? Think about it. Ultimately, there is a spell being cast on the candidate. The members of the lodge performing the degree are performing ritual magic. They follow a specific pattern of floor work, and they say specific words. If you don't think that your perception of reality wasn't changed after your 3 degrees, then I think you've missed the point. You enter the lodge room for the first time as a mister, and you leave the same lodge room as a brother. If that's not magic, or alchemy for that matter, then I don't know what is. All of our rituals and symbols are based upon more ancient rituals and symbols. Our rituals and symbols do have an esoteric meaning. Unfortunately, we have placed a stigma on this idea. Some of it has been placed upon us by public perception. I'm sure that someone will read this article, see the word magic with a K, and immediately claim devil worship. Magic is a tricky word. However, it is present in our rituals and especially in our degree work. There are a growing number of Freemasons like myself that are tired of having the stigma placed upon ideas like this. We want to explore these ideas. Ultimately, we're going to lose a lot of Freemasons and potential members because of our inability to hold a dialogue about esoteric education. The exoteric-centered members of Freemasonry will continue to perform magic in every degree without even knowing they're performing it. Then they'll go across the street from the lodge to have a beer after the degree and not understand what really just took place during the degree. That makes me incredibly sad. I'm not asking for esoteric education at every meeting. Unless you have a lodge full of guys who want to discuss those ideas at every meeting, which is a dream I hope someday to achieve. But I am asking for it to have a seat at the table. For every educational lecture we have on character development, we want to be able to present one about Kabbalah, the astrological aspects of our ritual, or the hermetic arts and sciences. Getting them to understand that there's magic happening in every degree, opening and closing of a lodge, due to our ritual is key to get this dialogue started. Those of us who want more esoteric education want to be able to discuss esoteric ideas and concepts with our brethren without ridicule or judgment before the discussion occurs. We want our brethren to have open minds. We want them to be able to discuss the ideas, and if they disagree with them, be able to have a civil discourse about why. We want to be able to reintroduce the idea of a chamber of reflection without being looked down upon like it's Satanism by my fellow brethren. We want to talk about Freemasonry in terms of it being a mystery school, not a social service organization. Maybe one day, I'll be able to be a part of a lodge that is like Vitruvian in Indianapolis or Space Novum in northern Illinois, where I feel esoteric and non-esoteric ideas are able to flow freely and without judgment. I'm looking for 20 like-minded guys in my area that are willing to take on forming a lodge with me. It might take years, but it's a goal. I'm always telling other brethren in my articles to find a lodge or make one if what they're experiencing isn't what they want. Time to put my money where my mouth is. Darren A. Laners. All right, Darren, you already got a charter member right here. I'm ready to go. I have to say, I really enjoyed this because not only does it talk about some of that frustration that many of us feel, it offers a solution, right? We're always talking about don't come to the table with a problem unless you have a potential solution. And in this, of course, the solution is just start a lodge. And people think, oh, yeah, real easy, just start a lodge. Well, it really is that easy, and it's so easy that I wrote a book about it. It's a simple process to do. A few things within this article made me trail off for just a quick moment before coming back to the article. And those are essentially that. One, he uses this term in the Western esoteric tradition. I don't really think there is a Western esoteric tradition. There's Western esotericism, right, which is a conglomeration of different things that is completely broken up over time. There's no tradition. A thing happens for a while, takes a break, comes back. There's no long span of practice. That said, he's right. The idea that you're using ritual and symbolism to change your perception of reality. And then, you know, to take it a step further, maybe even to change reality, real time. So really cool there. The other thing that stuck out is he's almost within this going about the request of having esoteric education is almost too polite. In fact, what's interesting is when he talked about a brother wanting to talk about the Kabbalah, well, if this is within the jurisdiction of Illinois, our official Grand Lodge and Tender program, which is stressed very rigidly that we must follow, calls out that the Master Mason should make himself familiar with the Kabbalah in particular. And yet, somebody scoffed at the idea, which I think is just wild. Anyway. Awesome piece. If you're in the St. Joseph Ogden area of Illinois, somewhere down around there, get in touch with Darren. Start a lodge. I'll be a charter member. For our Craftsman Plus, I'd love to know if you had these same struggles and if so, what did you do to overcome it? Did you start a new lodge? Did you find a new way to approach the lodge? Did you have a study club? Let us know. Next up, I want to do an all-new segment with Brother Patrick Day on Masonic Mythbusters. Now, this week, in Masonic Mythbusters, I have to preface this by saying I know tradition and reverence for individuals long since past is important. And yet, there is the saying that if it can be destroyed by the truth, it deserves to be destroyed by the truth. Now, no one is suggesting the destruction of a personality or questions the immense value somebody has brought to the fraternity. However, it may be time we do come to grips with some hard-to-swallow truth. So whether you agree with it or not, here's Brother Patrick Day with Masonic Mythbusters. Just the facts. No spin.
In a digital landscape filled with historical inaccuracy, out-of-context quotes on memes and soundbites, there is an epidemic of fraternal occult, mythological, and historical misinformation. It's time to set the record straight. Masonic Mythbusters with Patrick Day.
Was Albert Pike a racist? Or at the very least, did he support the atrocious institution of slavery? By merit of the fact that Albert Pike was Brigadier General of the Confederate Army in the Indian Territory, now called Oklahoma, it's hard to imagine that someone willfully joining to fight, and not just fight, but lead soldiers to fight, to preserve the institution of slavery, and simultaneously being opposed to slavery, that would just be odd. That would be like someone joining a protest and simultaneously not actually supporting what is being protested, or just there to yell and hold signs and don't actually support it at all. Anyway, before continuing, it just needs to be stated and made absolutely clear that the American Civil War was emphatically and truly about slavery. I grew up in South Carolina. I've heard every conceivable apology for why the Civil War was about anything other than slavery. Yet, one really only needs to read, like, I don't know, the Articles of the Confederacy, or read a speech by Jefferson Davis to see that it was absolutely about slavery and white supremacy. I mean, like, this is why, like, say, the Corn Amendment was so useless. It was the federal government's last-ditch attempt to avoid a war. I'm picking on the Corn Amendment here. The Corn Amendment would have guaranteed the southern states' right to keep slavery and could in no way be inhibited by the federal government, probably in perpetuity. You don't create an amendment that says that the Constitution cannot be amended to permit Congress to interfere with any institution within any state. Quote, including that of persons held to labor or service by the laws of said state. Yeah, that had nothing to do with slavery at all. Yeah, being sarcastic. Of course, the Corn Amendment never passed, as the war started a month after it was proposed, and well before it could be ratified, and even that didn't matter, as South Carolina had already succeeded 3 months before, followed shortly thereafter by Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Georgia. Yeah, several states had already succeeded, so the Corn Amendment was pointless, even if it could have protected the institution of slavery. Whatever. The Civil War was about slavery. That's a fact. It's a fact. Further, we need to understand the entire economy of the South depended upon slave labor. While only about 30% of Southern male landowners owned slaves, there was still the option for poor Southerners, nonetheless, to have the opportunity to rent slaves. Even Albert Pike owned slaves. We know this. Starting on June 24th, 1840, Albert Pike publishes a series of notices in the Arkansas State Gazette in Little Rock that he was offering a $50 reward, which is approximately $1,500 today, for a runaway slave named Rebecca. The fact stands that those who fought for the Confederacy understood the institutions they were fighting for and did so gladly. One need only peruse the hundreds, thousands of Confederate soldiers, journals and letters, not to mention the writings and speeches of Confederate leaders, that the defense of slavery was the primary objective for the war. They knew it, and if you could talk to your great-great-grandpappy today, you'd know it as well. Now, objectively, we may say, sure, Pike owned slaves. But that doesn't mean he supported slavery, because that's just the way things were back then. I guess that's a good point. I mean, they're not mutually exclusive. I mean, it's super, uber, duper pedantic to make that argument, but it's nonetheless true. That is fallacious overgeneralization. But I'm equally pedantic, so let's dig into this. This kind of thing was argued to me 2 years ago when the Pike statue in Washington, D.C. was toppled and set afire. That was such an annoying period of time for me. I had Masons sending me evidence such that Pike shared his Scottish Rite rituals with Prince Hall Masons in the late 1800s, and he was good friends with the Sovereign Grand Commander Thornton A. Jackson, Prince Hall, and that many Prince Hall Masons regard Pike as a, quote, staunch friend of Negro Masonry. Yeah, that's a real quote by some Prince Hall Masons. I just got a mind dump of these things sent to me in 2020. Yet it is an inescapable fact that Pike fought for the Confederacy, and that does not mean nothing. If only he could have wrote it down somewhere, that he approved of slavery. If he just came out and said it, that might settle it. Well, he did. This actually took me a while to find, and it took me 2 years to find this. In 1856, 5 years before the war started, Pike publishes The Letters to the People of the Northern States, of which I can only find one copy, and it may be the only copy, and it is in the Boston Public Library. In these letters, he states, I want to apologize right now if I slip into this kind of, like, Southern gentleman sort of style of speaking. I just got back from South Carolina, so I have a slight Southern accent at this time. Pike writes, quote, I am not one of those who believe slavery a blessing. I know it is an evil, as great cities are an evil, as the concentration of capital in a few hands, oppressing labor, it's rather Marxist of you, Pike, is an evil, as the utter annihilation of free will and individuality in the army and navy is an evil, as in this world everything is mixed, good and evil. Nor am I one of those who consider slavery an unmitigated curse and evil, a great outrage upon humanity and a crime in the sight of God. There is something to be said in defense of God's wisdom in allowing it, I think. Almost everything in every institution in this world is, on some one side and in some respect, an evil. Slavery, as it exists among us in the South, presents a great problem which we feel wholly unable to solve. If the Negro had not been intellectually the inferior, and vastly the inferior of the white man, his bondage would never have begun, or if begun, its continuance would have been but brief. That inferiority stands in the way of his enfranchisement. Sweet Jesus, Pike. With this mingled farce and tragedy of Haiti before our eyes, that is the slave rebellion, you certainly do not expect us to impoverish ourselves and let our smiling plantations become tangled wilderness for the sake of turning 2 or 3 millions of obedient and for the most part comfortable and cheerful laborers into a vast horde of drones and paupers. God has been so beneficent and good as to so constitute man that he shall instinctively love that which he looks up to and depends on him. We love the dog that guards our dwelling, promptly obeys our will, follows our footsteps, and is ever ready to defend us. None but the brute would, God, Pike, you're so verbose, wantonly injure his dog. Do you not imagine that this is the same instinct of human nature makes us feel an affection beyond the impulse of interest? For the slave that has grown up with us from boyhood, that is dependent on us, that regards us as a superior being. So, Pike is arguing that we already have slavery, so why not keep it? Further, everything has a little bit of evil in it, so why not just keep this evil for its convenience? And if that's not enough, then it was ordained by God when he made black people too stupid to evade slavery, so it's their own fault they are enslaved. Yeah. Yeah. Pike makes an argument that many slave owners felt. That being a slave owner was a paternalistic role. When you hear these arguments that slaves were like members of the family, understand these are coming out of that paternalistic view ingrained in owning slaves. Yes, they saw themselves as being like fathers. That is true. Yeah, a father with a belt and a heavy hand, fathers that rape their daughters, fathers that use starvation and violence as motivation, fathers that force their sons to fight to the death for sport, etc. Great fathers. Robert E. Lee saw himself as a patriarchal figure to his slaves, and his wife describes him as such, and Pike sees himself as such. But he likens himself to a dog owner and his slaves as dogs. Yeah, that's a little hard to say he didn't support slavery after that. And not to mention in reading the above, Pike is, like, really, really racist. Really racist. I guess that's another pedantic fallacy, which was definitely brought to my attention. Just because Pike supported slavery does not mean he was racist. I remember several Masons telling me that he was just a man of his time, and that we were judging him based on our contemporary standards. While that is true, after the war, Pike was totally opposed to black suffrage. I mean, like, outwardly, just, like, very white supremacist. So, I don't like this whole judge him based on his time, or don't judge him at all because that was their time. No, we absolutely should judge them. I'm gonna judge them all day. Quote, "The white race, and that race alone, shall govern this country. It is the only one that is fit to govern, and it is the only one that shall." Albert Pike. I'm gonna call it what it is. That sounds like white supremacy right there. In 1868, in the Memphis Daily Appeal, Pike writes the following: "The disenfranchised people of the South, robbed of all the guarantees of the Constitution, can find no protection for property, liberty, or life except in secret association. If it were in our power, we would unite every white man in the South who is opposed to Negro suffrage into one great order of Southern Brotherhood, with an organization complete, active, vigorous, and which a few should execute the concentrated will of all, and whose very existence should be concealed from all but its members. That has been the resort of the oppressed in all ages." It's Pike, get it together. This quote actually comes out of a concern Pike had concerning the Ku Klux Klan. Now, Pike has been accused of having founded the Ku Klux Klan, or been a prominent member. However, there's just absolutely no evidence to support this. But based on the above, Pike was amicable to something kind of like the KKK, but with better leadership and less foolishness. That said, Pike didn't like the Klan. They sure did like him. Or at least a group of Klansmen liked Albert Pike, as is evidenced by the fact that in Illinois, there was a group of Klansmen who called themselves Albert Pike Klan No. 12. Yeah, that just doesn't bode well. Now, as I mentioned above, Pike was good friends with Thornton A. Jackson, Sovereign Grand Commander of the United States, United Supreme Council, 33rd Degree Southern Jurisdiction, Prince Hall Affiliation. Man, Masons like long titles. Yes, this is well attested that Pike was good friends with a black man, a Prince Hall Mason. So he had a black friend. It's not like a misogynist never married a woman. It's not like a racist never had a black friend. I got a member of my family who has a black friend, and he is very racist and open about it. There's not a lot of evidence that definitively illustrates Pike was in favor of Prince Hall Masonry. In fact, there is a lengthy letter to John D. Caldwell, Grand Secretary of Ohio, on September 13, 1875, where Pike repeatedly says negative and derogatory things about Prince Hall Masonry, of which I will quote portions, because it's long. "I can see as plainly as you that the Negro question is going to make trouble. There are plenty of regular Negro Masons and Negro lodges in South America and the West Indies, and our folks only stave off the question by saying that Negro Masons here are clandestine. Prince Hall Lodge was as regular a lodge as any lodge created by competent authority, and had a perfect right, as other lodges in Europe did, to establish other lodges, making itself a mother lodge. That's the way the Berlin lodges, Three Globes and Royal York became Grand Lodges. The Grand Orient of Haiti is as regular as any other. So is the Grand Orient of the Dominican Republic, which I dare say has Negroes in it and Negro lodges under it. Again, if the Negro lodges are not regular, they can easily get regular lodges. If our Grand Lodges won't recognize Negro lodges, they have the right to go elsewhere. The Grand Lodge can't say to 8 more Masons, black or white, we will not give you a charter because you are Negroes, or because you wish to work in the Scottish Rite, and you shall not go elsewhere to get one. That latter part is bosh. I think there is no middle ground between rigid exclusion of Negroes or recognition and affiliation with the whole mass. If they are not Masons, how protect them as such or at all? If they are Masons, how deny them affiliation? Or have two supreme powers and one jurisdiction? I am not inclined to meddle in the matter. I took my obligations to white men, not to Negroes. When I have to accept Negroes as brothers or leave Masonry, I shall leave it. I am interested to keep the ancient and accepted rite uncontaminated, in our country at least, by the leprosy of Negro association. I think that nearly expresses Pike's feelings about Prince Hall Masonry, because it's confusing. To be honest, it's hard to make sense of his feelings, and maybe he didn't understand how he felt. He certainly felt that his obligations to the fraternity were made to white men, that much he makes clear. And in fact thinks black Masons are a disease. He calls them a leprosy. Wow. Yet he goes on in convoluted and contradictory ways about whether or not they are regular or clandestine. He may have been a lawyer. Hey, judging by the above arguments he makes, I wouldn't call him a good lawyer. He just never seeming to make up his mind, saying they could be considered regular, but who's to say is to recognize them, and he goes on and just all kinds of weird ways. Anyway, I think it's important. Pike was a human being. As were all Confederates, regardless of whether they saw persons of color as being human too is another matter, but the fact stands. They were human and deeply flawed. Pike is not ineffable. He does not speak for all Masons. I personally think his morals and dogma is a convoluted mess of disassociated ideas freely associated with dispersed symbols that is better to be schizoanalyzed per Deleuze and Guattari than anything I could be. Anything that could be useful, formal systemization of understanding Masonry in any meaningful way. I think the psychoanalysts would find Pike more interesting than Pike being actually useful to Masonry, but that's my opinion, because he does not speak for me. I don't care for Albert Pike, or what he wrote, though I've read a lot of it. Perhaps his friendship with Thornton Jackson, and perhaps other Prince Hall Masons, of which I don't have a lot of evidence of, and him sharing his ritual with Prince Hall Masonry, was a positive move in the right direction. Perhaps as he got older he became less racist. If such is the case, then there is no need to whitewash his youth. I think it gets brushed aside all too often that Pike was a man of his time and like everyone else in his day. This does not excuse that he believed that white men were superior to persons of color, and probably believed this into his dying breath. It needs to be acknowledged, and if he truly began to change his opinion later in life, is that not a good thing to emphasize? There's no need to whitewash his youth because he became more tolerant as he grew older. H.P. Lovecraft, the horror fiction writer, is a great example of this. He was super racist most of his life. But in his final years, yeah, he died young, but in his final years, he begins to change his opinion, becomes more tolerant. He even reflects this in his later writings, such as At the Mountains of Madness, in which some sympathy is given to the old ones. I believe every Lovecraft enthusiast acknowledges and even openly discusses Lovecraft's racism, because we have no issue with it, given that he grew out of his racism as he got older. I certainly have issue with it, you know, there's problems in his writing, some of it's really racist. But we don't have a problem with liking Lovecraft, because we know he grows out of his racism later. I certainly don't see headlines about Lovecraft statues in Providence being toppled and burned. Even if Lovecraft never stopped being racist, I think there would be much heavier criticism of his racism. Readers would acknowledge he had some existentially horrifying tales, but there certainly wouldn't be a statue of him in Rhode Island. And Pike did wonderful things. His enthusiastic revival of Scottish Rite Masonry is almost totally unprecedented for a single man and Mason. His contribution to Masonic literature is significant and impactful, and even I can't deny that, no matter how much I can't stand morals and dogma. I think Masons have a hard time with accepting a Mason they love and admire was racist and in support of slavery. I get it. One of my favorite bands is Emperor. It's a Norwegian black metal band. I know that Trim and Samoth burned churches in the 90s, and that one former member, Faust, murdered a homosexual man. I love black metal. It's a great genre. It might be one of the most extreme and transgressive form of music that ever disgraced the face of the earth. And I can't get enough of it, but I can in no way try to clean up or argue away the crimes of so many black metal bands committed throughout the 1990s. I accept and acknowledge these were confused teenagers that did terrible things, and many of whom still believe in horrific stuff like Varg from Mayhem, for instance, who murdered one of his bandmates and is still a white supremacist today. Sometimes you have to accept that there are terrible people in this world that incidentally made some useful contributions, and some that you in particular appreciate. I mean, I love the poetry of Lawrence N. Greenleaf, and I greatly admire his contributions to Colorado Freemasonry, but the dude was pretty racist for most of his life, and I believe he did get less racist as he got older thanks to his association with Henry Bromwell, but I'm pretty certain he still hated Native Americans to his dying breath. However, I still have to acknowledge his faults as a young man, and I am mindful of his racism when I am reading poems of his youth. I do not separate the man from the art, and I don't think we should. His contributions can be admired while simultaneously condemning faulty and ignorant beliefs. Another example, though I am a post-structuralist, I sometimes enjoy the philosophy and writings of Martin Heidegger, who was a known member of the Nazi Party. Like, he wasn't just, like, sympathetic to the Nazis. He signed up and was a legit member of the Nazi Party. I don't think any philosopher has ever tried to argue away or even conceal that Heidegger was a Nazi. But his philosophy is compelling and foundational in many ways. It's revolutionary. I can't deny that, but I will never try to accept Heidegger as a Nazi because I appreciate some of his ideas. I don't separate the two things because the man and his work are inherently linked, but I don't accept and condone both as a result, as my acceptance of his philosophy and political affiliations are not inherently linked. This may be the post-structuralist in me. All that said, let me just reiterate and reinforce some things. Pike was racist. He was a supporter of the Confederate cause to keep and expand the institution of slavery. And he was an anti-black suffrage with many white supremacist leanings. In my opinion, he was not a great human being, filled with many faults. I suppose I should acknowledge that he did champion indigenous Americans. He worked with them, worked his legal skills to give them some favor with the federal government, in many ways helping mend many ways the federal government had failed indigenous Americans. And he led a regiment of indigenous Americans in the Civil War. But when it came to black people, he generally despised them and fought to keep them enslaved and out of power. And he openly writes and publishes these things throughout most of his life. It is very difficult to argue around his incredibly racist words and sentiments. Now, I'm not a member of the Scottish Rite, but most Scottish Rite Masons I know love Pike. They adore his contributions to Scottish Rite Masonry. And that's more than okay. When it comes to Albert Pike, it's okay to admire him as a Mason, and even for his service to Indigenous Americans in the Indian Territory, though I still draw some personal grievances. But as a human and a citizen of this country, I think we should acknowledge and even condemn his faults and failings. Just as the pedantic arguments like just because he fought for the South does not mean he supported slavery is not mutually exclusive, to admire the work of someone while condemning many of the things that they believed. So there. I said it. It's been said.
Well, there you have this very intriguing and serious look at a topic that has been on the minds of many for a long time. I want to thank Patrick Day for his candid, open, and thoughtful approach to a topic that really is quite sensitive for many Masons. The idea of tackling the Civil War and what it was truly about is no small task, especially in today's polarized society. Next up, I would love to read a new piece from Brother Randy Sanders. It's called Rainbows and Unicorns, Approaching Masonic Symbolry Gently. I recently experienced a sad exchange where a brother told me he liked Masonic education, but he didn't want to hear about any rainbows and unicorns, like esoteric stuff. His Freemasonry had no room for such nonsense, even though he heard it in several appended bodies. He went on to tell me that I was part of only a fraction of Freemasons, maybe 20% at most, that even cared about the deeper esoteric meanings of symbolism and ancient mysteries, because Freemasonry is a fraternity, a brotherhood. He had a valid point. Freemasonry was seriously diluted about 100 years ago with the influx of membership into a social fraternity. This is true. The old lodge records of long discourse of philosophy during the lodge show we used to encourage deep thought and reflection on Masonic symbolism. That changed. Mackey, Wilmshurst, and the rest wrote extensively about what they had termed parrot Masons, who are perfect ritualists and can recite the basics of what each symbol means, but what about these same Masons who are so admired for their memory work and delivery? They never seem to take it to the next level of contemplation and understanding. Yet we give these Masons rewards. We give them cards where they might proudly show others that they have tested and passed with only a handful of mistakes. Many Masons simply stop there. A few weeks ago, I witnessed another sad exchange between brothers again looking to remove a brother from a group conversation because he had a different opinion that grated against the first individual. This is hardly the first exchange I've witnessed of a brother looking to ostracize another brother for not doing Freemasonry the way another brother thought it should be done. I am saddened that societal influences crossed over into the fraternity, to the point I see brothers looking to kick out or censor other brothers' opinions, no matter whether good or bad. The point is an open debate, dare I say, open rhetoric. A difference of opinion is healthy, and, all the way back to the early great works of the thinkers, open debate is the mark of civilization. I may not like your opinion, nor your particular view on some moral issue, but to censor or expel based on opinion and views? The same brothers who were wanting to ostracize another brother may be shocked to see they belong to the very vocal minority. 80% of the fraternity is not as esoteric as these brothers would like us to all be, and attempting to ostracize those who don't practice Freemasonry in the same way would backfire. Those pushing would then be the ones pushed out. Maybe that's not a bad thing. There, I said it. Maybe the esoteric Masons who are pushing their opinions and beliefs on others should be kicked out of the fraternity. After all, are not these esoteric hotheads the ones being closed-minded as to giving the freedom to other Masons to do as they wish? That's a lot to take in for the moment. My position is to highlight the folly of both positions or opinions. Expulsion from this fraternity should be the very last resort, and never spoken of in normal conversation. Censure and other means of Masonic discipline exists for a reason, and they also should never enter a normal Masonic conversation. What I witnessed in both extremes of not wanting any esoteric education as opposed to kicking people out or shunning them for not being esoteric enough is just silly. Both extremes are just childish. We are Freemasons. We are those set apart from society who are charged with approaching concepts and philosophies on the level, and that means being level-headed too. I don't see any explanation except neither side spent enough time working on entered apprentice lessons, and they speak from pop culture lessons and social values, not from Freemasonry's philosophical teachings. We must take a step back from both extremes of philosophical approaches, and that requires a gentle touch. Ritual is important, and how you approach your own personal ritual is even more so. Esoteric symbolism is important in how you approach your own understanding of your relationship with deity. How is that not the most important part of your life and work as a Freemason? The gentle touch may be too subtle for some. We must go back to silence being the first lesson and simply listen. What would happen if we held on to our opinion for just 24 hours of contemplation before stating it to others? How much more powerful would it be to analyze our own opinions of rainbows and unicorns before telling others we are closed-minded to symbolism and philosophy? Conversely, how much more powerful would it be to analyze our own opinions of those less esoteric before pushing the narrative the less esoteric should be expelled for not thinking the same way? We do not live in the shoes or lives of our brothers, and we must not push our beliefs onto others. We are taught to use a very quiet whisper in the ear, almost never censure. And where would that leave expulsion? Whether the other brother wants the change, not ours to make happen, but we can and should always remember each other in our prayers. Randy Sanders. I really like this piece. In fact, it tied nicely with, I think, the first piece, which is why I butted them up on either end of this particular issue. In fact, we had a hot take in the middle of the episode where some might accept and some might not. And yet we present all education, aptly so. Accept it or don't. For the Craftsman Plus, I would love to know if you've ever experienced, whether an esoteric Mason or not, a kerfluffle, a pushback. We asked last week about if you'd ever presented something where you got some bad feedback. This week, I want to know what kind of bad feedback, and what were you presenting? Esoteric? History? Something else? I'd love to learn from your examples, and of course, I'll add my own to the conversation. That's it for this week. I want to thank you all so much for listening, and in a couple of weeks, we've got another segment from Brother Patrick Day I hope you all will join us for, called The Temple Legend, and it's a longer one. So with that said, I want to thank everybody for coming with us on this edifying journey. I hope we all learned, we all grew a little bit. I learned some stuff, absolutely, this week. I hope you did too. I want to thank the producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. You all have made this thing accessible to everyone. Every single episode always available. No backlog that's available to specific people who pay a premium or anything. All the episodes are always available to everyone forever. And it's all thanks to our supporters. If you would like to learn how to support the WCY podcast, quality Masonic education that you can trust, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. Again, we've got a few different options, whether the bookstore, the shop, or just supporting the program. Every bit helps. And of course, thanks also to everybody out there who is sharing the show and episodes with their brethren. My thanks one more time goes out to Brother Patrick Day, who is an incredible force for Masonic education, a truth teller, and I commend him on his unique ability to bring a story through recorded audio format. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
Z-A-S-G-R-A-M.